Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Thomas Moore. I'm a hydrogeologist working in the Santa Clara Valley Water District's Groundwater Management Unit in the role of perchlorate project manager. Today I will describe for you the district's plans for its perchlorate background and source study, which is now underway. The district is Santa Clara County's water wholesaler and carries the roles of groundwater management, flood protection, operation of reservoirs, pipelines, and treatment plants, and stream stewardship. As a groundwater basin manager, the district's board has set a goal for its staff in its ends policy, which states that the groundwater basins are aggressively protected from groundwater contamination and the threat of contamination. Accordingly, we are a vested stakeholder in groundwater contamination cases, and we actively engage the regulatory agencies to ensure that the outcomes of groundwater cleanup cases are successful at protecting the district's ability to rely upon groundwater for a safe, clean, and reliable water supply for Santa Clara County's residents. Next slide, please. And one more. Okay. The district received a congressional earmark for funds to address the perchlorate issue. This allowed the district to apply for grant funding. The district received approval from US EPA, the administrator of the congressional funds, for two projects, one of which is the perchlorate background and source study. The district elected to pursue determination of perchlorate background levels and perchlorate sources to provide answers to a few important questions regarding how perchlorate has affected water supply reliability in the August groundwater subbasin. These questions are, is there a non-zero background concentration of perchlorate in the August groundwater subbasin? A non-zero background concentration could be present if perchlorate occurs naturally in rain, as it has been found in Texas, or in soils, as has been found in San Diego and elsewhere, or if a long-term, non-point anthropogenic source, such as fertilizer use, has contributed low levels of perchlorate throughout the region. The second question is whether forensic geochemical methods using isotopes and other techniques can differentiate natural perchlorate from anthropogenic perchlorate in the August groundwater subbasin. And a related question is whether two different man-made sources of perchlorate can be distinguished or separated using forensic methods. At this time, the district is not aware of additional sources of perchlorate apart from the Olin source that have been proven beyond questions to contaminate groundwater in the August basin. Nevertheless, the district approaches the question with an open mind. We take the follow the data approach. Occurrence of low levels of perchlorate, and this is getting back to the question you were asking, Chairman Young, occurrence of low levels of perchlorate in wells along the east and west margins of the August Basin at locations removed from the core of the plume do not fit the working conceptual model for perchlorate in the basin. Therefore, a study of background conditions and sources of perchlorate is warranted. The study area is the entire August groundwater subbasin. Next slide, please. The primary focus will be groundwater in wells, but samples of surface water, recharge water, and rain may also be included. The methods will include using low detection limits, lab methods for analysis of perchlorate in wells and recharge sources. Reporting limits will be in the subpart per billion range. This is using a different method than ion chromatography that's been used so far. It's using a method called LC-MSMS, which is a little more specific and a little more clear, less prone to interference from other ions. The spatial pattern of perchlorate occurrence will help to discern possible origins of perchlorate. The study will also use isotope methods to identify the origin of the perchlorate itself. Next slide, please. This is the only technically challenging slide. Isotope fingerprinting of perchlorate involves collecting about 2 milligrams of perchlorate or more on a specialized ion exchange resin cartridge shown on the left there. Because perchlorate in most parts of the basin is less than 10 parts per billion, it may take several days of pumping to load the cartridges with enough perchlorate to do the analysis. The cartridges are then sent to the lab at the University of Illinois Chicago, where chemists will desorb the perchlorate and then thermally separate the perchlorate molecule into its chloride and oxygen components. Stable isotope ratios of the chloride and oxygen atoms will be determined in the lab using isotope ratio mass spectrometry. Stable isotopes are naturally occurring non-radioactive atoms whose mass varies when extra neutrons are present. Now, this is a subject that interests me a great deal, and I'll be happy to answer questions about that. But rather than go into a science lecture at this point, I brought along with me an article that I co-published in the Journal of Environmental Forensics on perchlorate forensics, which describes this approach in more detail, and I'll leave that with your clerk today in case you care to have a look at that. In addition, your staff has undertaken to learn all about perchlorate forensics. Perchlorate forensics alone, however, is not expected to fully answer questions about perchlorate origins. The findings of the isotope analysis must be integrated with our understanding of the basin hydrogeology and other lines of evidence, such as groundwater age, using tritium-helium ratios to estimate the groundwater age, and this will be done in this study. The sum of all factors will be integrated using a multivariate approach. The district has retained a competent consulting team to do the work, comprised of Locus Technologies, a local firm in Mountain View, assisted by expert from Stanford and the University of Illinois. In addition, per EPA requirements for grant funding, we have formed a project advisory committee to provide technical oversight of the work. And the PAC, or the Project Advisory Committee, is made up of experts from US EPA, Stanford, NASA, and Texas Tech University. Next slide, please. I'm afraid I just talked over all these, so I'd like to go to the next slide. The schedule of analyses shown here is currently in revision, but will closely resemble this list. The list of analytes includes analysis of marker chemicals, such as strontium nitrate, to help distinguish sources of perchlorate. Flares are made mostly of strontium nitrate. That's what makes them burn bright red. And a small amount of potassium perchlorate is also present in the flare as an oxidizer, between 5 and 10%. Olin used about 1.8 million pounds of strontium nitrate per year. So it's possible that either strontium or nitrate may be a useful marker of perchlorate released from the Olin site. One of the goals for this project is also to obtain source samples from perchlorate sources that may play a role to see whether these define the endpoints for the isotopic character of the perchlorate analyzed in the August groundwater. Next slide, please. There's been mention of Chilean fertilizer. Chilean fertilizer has perchlorate that occurs naturally in the Atacama Desert in Chile. That's the driest point on Earth. And for over a long period of time, perchlorate has accumulated in the fertilizer deposits there. Man-made perchlorate can be distinguished from naturally occurring perchlorate found in Chile's Atacama Desert using isotopes of chloride and oxygen. The Atacama perchlorate is shown on the lower right, man-made perchlorate in the upper left. Chilean fertilizer has been imported to the United States for nearly 150 years, and it's been shown to contribute perchlorate to groundwater in Southern California. So if natural perchlorate is present in the Yagas Basin, this approach will tell us. One of the questions that was asked was whether these methods, isotope methods for perchlorate identification, have been applied elsewhere. And the answer is yes, they have. For the Aerojet case in Rancho Cordova near Sacramento, there was a determination made that fertilizer is likely the cause. And recently, findings have been made at the Jet Propulsion Laboratories in Pasadena using these methods in the same lab that more definitively identified that fertilizer used in citrus crops was a factor in perchlorate occurrence there. So the methods have been used, and there's also been a lot of benchmarking in the lab. So we have confidence that the methods in and of themselves can work. What remains to be seen is how well they work in this basin. Next slide, please. The same type of plot can be used to distinguish ammonium perchlorate used in rocket fuel, for example, from potassium perchlorate used in flares. The one on the far right is from a source of perchlorate used in flare production. And a third approach, next slide please, uses two different isotopes of oxygen, oxygen 18 and the less common form, oxygen 17, which is an indicator of atmospheric origin, both taken from the perchlorate molecule to differentiate natural from man-made perchlorate. Next slide please. Overall, the study will rely on multiple lines of evidence to make interpretations relevant to the district's evaluation of perchlorate in the Yagas Subbasin and its impact to water supply reliability and groundwater. We anticipate that there will be a number of logistical and other challenges to carrying out the study, such as access to wells for sampling. We also expect that there will be technical challenges to interpreting the data, such as the same type of perchlorate from two different sources, for example, flares on the freeway and perchlorate from the Olin site. Nevertheless, we're optimistic that we will overcome these challenges and produce the best possible study for the questions we seek to answer. Last slide, please. The district has completed a competitive award process and retained a consultant in mid-August. We expect to receive the draft quality assurance project plan from the consultant in early October. The quality assurance plan is a requirement of EPA that must be completed before any sampling may begin. We anticipate that sampling will begin by the end of this calendar year and that the entire study will take more than a year to complete, but we will move it along as fast as we can do it well. So I thank you for your attention, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Any board questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And Olin is going to come up in the speaker card.
Right. Okay. Right here. Thanks.
Do we want to take a break or do we want to just continue on right now? Take a break? Okay, let's take a break then for about 10 minutes, a quick break.
Now let's resume our meeting.
I know it's hot in here, but I'm told that some of the windows may open, so feel free to open windows if you guys are passing out from lack of oxygen.
Okay. Let me tell you which speaker cards I have. Richard McClure, Dennis Kennedy, Ed Tees, Richard Pikema, Craig O'Donnell, Sylvia Hamilton, Melanie Richardson, and James Brazak. If there's anyone else that wishes to address us on this item, please fill out a speaker card and present it to Mr. Thomas at the side table here. Okay, Mr. McClure. You've got 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs, Chairman Young, and other members of the board for this opportunity to greet you today. In mid-August, Olin submitted two reports to you for review. One was a rather concise summary of our Northeast groundwater flow assessment. The second was a paper from MACTEC evaluating the potential sources for mushroom farms. I hope that information was valuable to you. Since September 2003, Olin has invested tremendous time and effort investigating the nature and extent of perchlorate northeast of the Olin site. We have submitted no less than 18 reports, enough to fill a banker's box, evaluating this situation. During this period, we've also met with numerous times with the Water Board and other stakeholders with our ongoing attempts to resolve the issues and explain findings. The central tenet of the city of Morgan Hill, that the tenant or the Nordstrom well has somehow reversed groundwater flow, cannot be substantiated by copious amounts of data collected and evaluated over numerous investigations conducted by USGS, Department of Water Resources, the Santa Clara Valley Water District, and MACTEC. More recent information provided by MACTEC through discrete, high-quality groundwater elevation data only substantiates earlier findings. Groundwater in the basin flows south. These reports also confirm that pumping from the Nordstrom well, or other wells for that matter, have not reversed groundwater flow sufficient to cause groundwater to flow uphill a mile and a quarter. There are six lines of evidence supporting these conclusions. One, the fact that perchlorate was detected in the initial sample taken from the Nordstrom well is strong evidence that perchlorate was there in that well when the well was installed. It didn't reverse the flow. Two, A persistent southward direction of groundwater flow has been documented by the USGS, Department of Water Resources, Santa Clara Valley Water District as far back as 1914. It's also consistent with the topography of this area and surface water drainage through all the creeks. In fact, there's no data whatsoever that would prove that there has been a substantial gradient from the site to the Nordstrom Park well. There are short-term perturbations in groundwater flow direction caused by wells, but none are on the scale necessary to establish the nexus between the Olin site and the Nordstrom well. 3, perchlorate has not been detected between the site and the Nordstrom Park well at concentrations greater than 6 parts per billion. Despite sampling nearly every well between the site and the Nordstrom well, there has never been a detection of perchlorate greater than 6 parts per billion. There is no discernible perchlorate plume between the site and the Nordstrom Park well. However, substantial data does indicate that there is a perchlorate plume south of the site, and we are continuing to investigate that. 4, imported water from the water district's recharge pond is a clear indication that there's a hydraulic barrier between the site and the Nordstrom Park well. This is indicated by a clear chemical distinction in the water provided through the recharge pond and the water that occurs naturally in the basin. 5, the distribution of nitrate also provides a line of evidence. Nitrate concentrations are relatively low, in the Nordstrom Park area as opposed to high south of the site. This is another indication of groundwater displacement by imported water from the water district. Finally, as we've discussed earlier today and ongoing, there are known perchlorate sources in the August Basin. These include sodium hyperchlorite, a major rocket motor manufacturing facility, fireworks, and emergency flares. Sodium hypochlorite is commonly used for disinfection, and the Water Board recently detected perchlorate in mushroom farms only located a half a mile north of the site. In addition, the city used sodium hypochlorite to disinfect the Nordstrom Park well in 2000, immediately before perchlorate was detected in the well above the MCL. The use of perchlorate by a rocket manufacturing facility in Morgan Hill is well documented, and we've heard concentrations today of over 1 million parts per billion. The Water District is aware of these sites and have hydraulically connected that particular site to the Yagas Basin. Perchlorate discharged from that facility, and this is an important point, it discharged from that facility for over 40 years, unchecked and unabated. There's no one that can tell you how much perchlorate was discharged to the basin during UTC's operation. Other activities, we've already heard them. Fireworks, road flare uses, and others that have been documented by many establishments, including the Water District. For these reasons, it is unreasonable and scientifically unfounded conclusion that perchlorate detected at the Nordstrom Park well originated from the Olin site. If I can have just a couple more minutes.
Go ahead.
It won't take long.
Wrap it up.
And this is an important point. Beyond the city's assertion regarding the Nordstrom Park well, Olin has continued its characterization efforts east of the site. Based on information that we've learned from the characterization report, we have not just completed one round of CPT samples, as Hector indicated, although he is unaware of it. We have conducted 2. In addition, work is ongoing to further characterize this area in relationship to Area 1 of the characterization report. And finally, in summary, we will provide an update to the Regional Board on September 29th regarding these areas. In all aspects, including the characterization report and the cleanup feasibility report, Olin has submitted timely reports pursuant to the cleanup and abatement order.
Okay.
Questions?
Any questions for Mr. McClure? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Dennis Kennedy.
Good afternoon, board members and staff. I'm Dennis Kennedy. I'm the mayor of the city of Morgan Hill. And on behalf of the 37,000 residents of Morgan Hill, I'm here to ask that the board hold Olin accountable for the perchlorate in the groundwater basin which our community draws its domestic water supply from. The Yagas Basin is only one basin. There is one plume of contamination spreading south and northeast. And there is one known source of contamination, the Olin Corporation and its operation of its flare manufacturing facility in Morgan Hill. Yet it is puzzling that the board has adopted two different regulatory approaches to what is a single problem. 18 months ago, you issued a comprehensive cleanup and abatement order for everything south of Tennant Avenue. Then you adopted a disjointed and unfocused approach for the rest of the single basin from which we draw our water supply. The result is that Olin has been able to escape accountability. Morgan Hill has not been well served by this two-track approach. Frankly, we don't understand the reluctance to amend the cleanup and abatement order or to issue a separate CAO to cover the portion of the plume north of Tennant Avenue. Is there any doubt that Olin's contamination threatens the deep aquifer from which we draw our municipal water supply? Or is there reluctance to assign responsibility because Olin has asserted so steadfastly, you just heard it, even if so utterly unpersuasively, that it can't be them? Morgan Hill has presented an abundance of evidence to demonstrate that Olin's perchlorate is in the deep aquifer of the release point, that is heading northeast, and that that contamination threatens the deep aquifer from which our domestic water supply is drawn. We have also pointed out to you how Olin's own reports and data demonstrate the threat. We have shown you where Olin's data and technical reports actually contradict its public disclaimers of responsibility. You heard that again. Here's an example of how the Olin two-track approach allows Olin to escape in the confusion. On April 30th, Olin submitted its first quarter monitoring report for a test taken in March, 6 months ago. Olin reported the presence of 4.4 parts per billion of perchlorate in the deep aquifer at a test well 3,000 feet north of the site. Since this inconvenient fact flies in the face of everything Olin has asserted, we thought that there would be great interest in seeing whether other tests would confirm it. Guess what? In the next quarterly report, Olin failed to report any results from that test well at all. Why? Because they only do what you order them to do, and you had not specifically ordered them to keep testing until they found the northerly extent of the single plume. Now, in fairness, Olin did take water level measurements, and it showed you, yet again, a north-to-northeast flow in the deep aquifer. This can be remedied by issuing a CAO for the entire basin, not just a portion of it south of an arbitrary line, which you see here. Let me show you how arbitrary that line is. Look at this. There's an obvious missing piece of this puzzle. What is happening to the north? See the beginning of a plume. That piece is missing. Hold Olin accountable to discover what's happening there and to correct it. Here's another example of how the two-track approach has allowed us to get off track. Olin continues to assert that it can't be them. According to Olin, it must be rainfall or fireworks or traffic accidents or agricultural processing or a manufacturing plant in the hills 5 miles away or well disinfection. Your board staff has directed Olin to put up or shut up, requiring Olin to prove that these other sources have impacted groundwater. And yet 3 weeks ago, Olin papers the file with yet another document making the same tired and unproven claims, this time specifically asserting that the cause of the contamination found north of their site is the disinfection of the Nordstrom well with liquid chlorine. We have submitted technical reports rebutting Olin's efforts to defuse the responsibility. Now I would like to give you a dramatic demonstration of the absurdity of the claim that the disinfection of the Nordstrom well with liquid chlorine has contaminated the basin. During the few minutes of my presentation so far this afternoon, the Nordstrom well pumped 2,000 gallons of water and treated it with ion exchange. In less than 2 minutes, it removed more than the volume of perchlorate estimated by Olin to have been introduced to the well when developed in 2001. And Mr. Chair, if I may just finish, I'll summarize. Olin used over 150,000 pounds of perchlorate annually for decades. That is where the focus belongs. Under a comprehensive CAO, Olin will have to find the extent of the contamination, determine the background levels, if any, and clean it up. We want Olin's perchlorate out of our basin. On the question of cleanup, we join with our colleagues in the perchlorate working group in urging you to give Olin a failing grade for their feasibility study. But you can insist that they get it right. We insist that the cleanup include the aquifer from which we draw our water supply. The solution is right in front of us. Instead of paying millions to consultants to continue studying the issue, let's work to clean it up. The solution is to pump and treat the groundwater that has been contaminated. Morgan Hill needs the water. Require Olin to pump and treat the contaminated water in the basin, and Morgan Hill will put it to beneficial use for our domestic water needs. Such a cooperative effort was not even discussed, much less evaluated in the so-called cleanup feasibility study. Let's figure out the economics and make it work for the public and the company. We were disappointed that today's agenda did not allow us or allow you to take action on this item, but rather was an update. In the light of your concerns at the May meeting, we were hoping for more. We now ask that the board direct the executive officer to draft a cleanup and abatement order for the area north of Tennant Avenue. Obtain comments from all interested parties and schedule it as an action item for your next meeting. Now, I'd like to thank the board for giving us an opportunity to speak today. I do have our city manager and our city staff here. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. But thank you for your...
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Letting us speak.
Any questions for the mayor? Okay, thank you. Ed Tews?
Tweez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here, as you recall, I was here last May, a couple months ago. I had the benefit of the data that you saw today. So many of my remarks I gave you to in May were reflective of the data that you don't get to see until September. That's part of the regulatory problem with dealing with this single case. So I just wanted to thank you again for the courtesy you showed me in May for scheduling this meeting and to reinforce the mayor's request on behalf of what we believe are a preponderance of significantly more folks who are affected by the perchlorate plume north of Tennant Avenue, that they also have the benefit of a comprehensive cleanup and abatement order.
Can you tell me how many of your water supply wells north of Tennant Avenue are showing perchlorate?
At the request of your staff, we provided the so-called JFLAG data, the estimates, and there were JFLAG estimates for three or four wells that showed the presence of perchlorate at less than four.
And are you drawing on those wells?
Yes, we are using
that water?
Yes, and we are treating two wells, the so-called Tennant Avenue well, which is directly south of the site, right across the street. We are treating that well with ion exchange and delivering it to our customers. And during the summer peak season, we treat the Nordstrom well, which historically has had perchlorate in excess of four or more parts per billion. The other wells have these JFLAG results of less than four, and we do need those for our water supply. When Morgan Hill made CNN a couple of weeks ago for having achieved 114 degrees temperature, we also achieved our highest water demand ever in the history of Morgan Hill, and we needed each and every one of those wells to meet that demand, and still we did not have sufficient fire flow excess capacity on top of that.
Okay, thank you. Richard Pakima.
Chairman Young and board members, thank you for the opportunity to express an opinion here. I am a resident of San Jose and don't sit on top of any of the perchlorate plumes that you are considering. I am a chemist and have familiarity with perchlorate and its properties and its analysis. 18 months ago, I offered an opinion during your comment period for the CAO. And today I am, and that opinion basically was that cleaning the aquifer up to background, namely zero levels, was infeasible. And my comments here apply only to that aspect of what you're talking about. I don't challenge any of the local controls or the rest of the stuff or where the plume is going, but the feasibility of cleaning up the aquifer to background levels. I reaffirm that opinion today that the clean up to zero background is infeasible, and I have offered as part of my written statement that you have a back of the envelope sanity check of one of the costs that would be involved if one attempted to do that, using Hector's example of extracting the groundwater, pumping it through an ion exchange resin, and restoring it to the aquifer. I assumed you'd put it in a separate container so you didn't have the problem of mixing with the aquifer. And I calculated on that basis that it would cost you roughly $120 million just for the electricity to do that. And that says to me it's infeasible. I didn't include all of the other engineering, drilling wells for extraction, recharge, and the rest of the stuff. And any errors in this calculation are mine, and I invite you to make your own. I just feel that in asking Olin to demonstrate or to provide feasibility study of cleaning up the aquifer to background levels, that that's an impossible task. And I believe that unnecessary regulation has a cost that applies to everyone, and I'm part of everyone. I believe that Olin's discharge was not a willful violation of rules or procedures, and that their response has been prompt and cooperative, and that the levels that exist in the aquifer, which will eventually get cleaned up by natural attenuation, I believe those levels are generally tolerable. Local levels should be cleaned up. Any questions?
Any questions from the board? Thank you for your comments. Okay, Craig O'Donnell.
While Mr. O'Donnell's coming up to the podium, I'll point out that I handed out a letter on his behalf that you have in front of you.
Thank you, Chairman Young. And on behalf of Assemblymember John Laird, for whom I work, welcome to the 27th District. And unfortunately, while you are in his district, he cannot be here today, so he does have this letter. I will try to jam through it in the next 3 minutes. Dear Chairperson Young, thank you for this opportunity to provide my initial comments on the Yaugas Subbasin, cleanup feasibility study report submitted to the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board on June 30th, 2006. Though I understand that the staff of the board has not yet had a chance to finish their review of the study, I look forward to reading their report. In the meantime, I wanted to stress my interest in seeing that California's policy of anti-degradation is upheld to the highest standard. It appears that this study proposes treatment alternatives that are either categorically impossible, claim to be prohibitively expensive, or rely on nature and luck to do the job. The study recommends this last alternative as the preferred alternative, arguing that public health will be protected with a cleanup level of 6 parts per billion. It even suggests that Olin is going above and beyond the call of duty by proposing a cleanup level that is less than the previously proposed cleanup level of 11 ppb. California Code of Regulations clearly states, quote, no provision of this section shall be taken to allow a concentration limit greater than background to exceed the maximum concentration that would be allowed under other applicable statutes or regulations. While California's Department of Health Services has only recently proposed a drinking water standard for perchlorate of 6 ppb, OEHA has a public health goal of 6 ppb in place for 2 years. Thus, Olin's suggestion that a higher cleanup level could have been proposed should be of concern to the board and its staff. The proposed background level in the study is 4 ppb, a number that appears to be chosen without clear documentation, just supposition. The burden of proof is on the discharger to show that the background level is not zero, and it appears that the study does not meet that threshold. I encourage the board to require a more stringent analysis of the proposed background level. Another aspect that I believe is missing from the study is the apparent lack of attention to protecting the agricultural users of the Yaugas Subbasin. State Water Resources Control Board Resolution Number 9249 is very clear in this matter, stating that the board shall, skipping ahead, consider all demands being made and to be made on these waters and the total values involved, beneficial and detrimental, economic and social, tangible and intangible. California Code of Regulations echoes these concerns with more specificity, stating, in establishing a concentration limit greater than background for a constituent of concern, the regional board shall consider the potential damage to wildlife, crops, etc. This study does not address the large agricultural economy in South Santa Clara County that is impacted by this discharge. In fact, the only mention of agriculture in the study is a suggestion that these farming operations are also responsible for the contamination. I do not believe that the state and regional water boards would consider this to be a full evaluation of possible impacts, and I hope that your board will consider require a more thorough analysis of this issue. Lastly, I am concerned about the consistent references to cleanup goals that are based on public health levels. While it is important to recognize the need for a cleanup level that will not be harmful to the health of the residents of South Santa Clara County, the intent of the legislature in passing the Port of Cologne Water Quality Act was to ensure that the focus of cleanup levels was on anti-degradation of the public's water resources. This should be a starting point of the analysis, but it does not appear to be. I appreciate this opportunity, et cetera. Sincerely, John Laird, you have the copy in front of you. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Any board questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you have any idea when the MCL is going to be finalized, or do you know what they're estimating?
If memory serves me, they have an October 30th public hearing in Sacramento, and I think by November they're proposing the final number. I think that's right, but that's just from the top of my head.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Sylvia Hamilton. And then Melanie Richardson, James Rizak, and this last card. Dilworth, possibly? D. Dilworth? Hope? I can't tell. It's, anyway, from Carmel. You know who you are. Okay. Ms. Hamilton.
Thank you. And good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Mr. Briggs and the board and staff. I wish I could talk as fast as Craig did, but I'm afraid my southern background just won't allow it, so I hope you ask me lots of questions. The perchloric community I'm Sylvia Hamilton. I'm chair of the perchloric community advisory group. The perchloric community advisory group, PCAG as we call it, has reviewed the June 30th, 2006 feasibility study and appreciates this opportunity to provide our comments. We have a tremendous amount of respect, I'm just going to cut to the chase here, for MACTAC. However, they did not prepare a feasibility study that is, in our opinion, reflective of their high level of expertise. And we know they have the talents, the expertise, and the information they need to do that. Personally, I realize I'm not a geologist, a hydrologist, or any other kind of ologist. Nevertheless, I immediately spotted, as soon as I started reading the feasibility study, that it was missing a great deal of information, and there were some that appeared to be incorrect. I was very disappointed. MACTAC, as I said, has the expertise to produce a quality study, and I wonder what the purpose is in not doing so. In the study, there are several statements and omissions that I'll briefly go over. One has been mentioned today about no further action and monitored attenuation were the only two cleanups that were really considered. As far as we're concerned, no viable alternatives were presented in that case. Both proposals do nothing alternatives. NFA and MA should be utilized only after an action alternative has been selected and completed. The study discards pump and treat as a viable alternative simply due to cost. It also states that pump and treat would take longer than the NFA and the MA would take. PCAG asks, how is that possible? How can doing something not make the cleanup faster than doing nothing? That doesn't make any sense to us. Also, cost is obviously a consideration, but isn't that supposed to take place only after a detailed analysis of all feasible alternatives and the effect on beneficial uses has been analyzed and determined? Those things should have been presented in this report, and they were not there. In the study, ag wells are not considered, which has already been addressed, so I'll move on from there. But we definitely believe they should be. They're obviously high volume, and they're also critical beneficial use. Through the study, the PHG and the EPA reference dose were referenced in support of the proposed background and also the long-term cleanup levels. PCAG contends that neither the PHG nor the EPA reference dose are meant to be used for that at all. PCAG therefore recommends that the regional board and staff reject this feasibility study is incomplete and inaccurate, and place a short time frame for remittal of the fully documented study that indicates topics such as the following. And I've got all those topics in the letter. I hope you received the letter from me. I'm sorry it was late and didn't get it into them sooner, but I do want to, in conclusion, to say that the Olin Corporation has accomplished a great deal during the 3 years. A lot of positive things have been done, and it's been a pleasure working with them as well as with all of you. And we thank you, and our community appreciates all of it. It's just that this particular report is not up to the level of expertise that is either expected or that the community deserves or that they're capable of. If you have any questions, I have a whole fistful of things I could talk about here.
Any questions for Ms. Hamilton? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Question I have for staff is, what do you anticipate is your process in terms of once you review the feasibility report and then have comments and questions? I take it you're going to send a letter back to Olin?
That's correct.
For further clarification or more information?
That's exactly the course of action that will take place. We'll put comments together, request clarifications, request that the report be revised if that's deemed appropriate, and based on the comments, then we would expect Olin to provide a response and then proceed towards issuing a cleanup order and hopefully establishing a cleanup level within the timeframes that we mentioned earlier.
Okay. All right, let's finish our cards, and then we may have some comments to make. Okay, Melanie Richardson.
Thank you, Chairman Young and members of the board. Although you heard from our director, Rosemary Kamei, earlier this evening or this afternoon, I just wanted to follow up on a question particularly that you, Board Member Hunter, had, and that was about why we were suggesting that this report could potentially jeopardize our EPA funding. The reason for that is we currently have over $4 million that we have been appropriated in funding from EPA, but this all requires a local match, a 45% local match, which is not like the other funding that we've pursued. Because of this, we have to be very careful about how we spend that money. We would be using our water ratepayers' money, and we cannot do work that should be Olin's obligation. The work that we would do would supplement anything that they would propose in their cleanup and feasibility study. Therefore, it's very important to us to understand what will the cleanup approach be. We do not think that the cleanup and feasibility report gave any reasonable cleanup alternative. As others have stated, I don't need to go over that. But the preferred approach that they gave of monitor and attenuate, which we call wait and hope, is certainly not the approach that we would want to be supplementing with that funding. One other, point that I wanted to mention about their suggested approach of monitor and attenuate is that it relies on the district's recharge operation. They're assuming that we're going to continue our recharge in the manner that we have in the past, and that is not necessarily a reasonable assumption. There are many reasons that we would not continue that in the same manner going forward, both depending on the hydrological year as well as depending on costs. So that's just one other point that I wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Brazak?
Can I be rude and out of order? I just realized something when she came up here from the Water District. I'll be real fast. There's one point that the Water District, is it all right? Please?
One minute. Go ahead.
I just need a second, actually. One of the things the Water District had every intention of making sure you knew about that is very inappropriate is that most of that, the plan was basing the cleanup on the recharge. Well, the recharge is controlled by an agency that Olin doesn't have any control over. So they wanted to make sure that they made that point, and it just dawned on me that it hadn't been made, I don't believe.
Okay, thank you. You know, all this is coming before us without staff having had an opportunity to complete their review of this report and to give us their input. So we're kind of getting a preview what the public thinks about this report, which is very interesting. I hope staff is taking lots of notes about this. And so this is just a status report today. Board's not taking any action, but we can give staff direction if we feel it's necessary. Okay, Mr. Brazak. And then last speaker is Dave Dilworth. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for any confusion. That card was to address item 6. Perhaps it was turned
you know
in
what?
Early.
You're right. It somehow it got Thank slipped you. Into this. Okay. Mr. Dilworth.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
David Dilworth, representing Helping Our Peninsula's Environment. Russ. There's a Kathy cartoon a little while ago that had a couple of different panels on the subject that ended up with the conclusion that this country doesn't need a president, it needs a mother. And one of the panels was about how when a child comes to the mom, the answer is not, well, we'll do a feasibility study and we'll do monitoring. I'm exaggerating a little. The concept is when you make a mess, you clean it up. So maybe your role is as a mother here. Make sure they get them cleaned up. Expertise we do have outside of cartoons is that of environmental impacts and alternatives. And you heard some comments earlier that said this is completely infeasible, it can't be done, without a whole lot of detail. I personally compiled the impacts database. It's the largest scientifically based set of environmental impacts based on quantified science. And we update it regularly. Well, along with the environmental impacts, it also has a whole set of mitigations, the ones that are science-based, quantified. It also has alternatives. And one of those that has just gotten some press recently is a process in Australia where they use ultrasound to break up chemicals in soils. They put the soils in a water solution, run it through an ultrasound machine, and through a process called cavitation, it's these extremely highly explosive things that happen just because of sound. It breaks the molecules apart. And perchlorate, while I haven't read that perchlorate was tested in this technology yet, perchlorate should be amenable to this process. But that's not just the only one. There are a number of different technologies that could be looked at in this way, and I don't think it's the best possible answer to just ignore feasible alternatives without a reasonable analysis of the broadest range of those. Second thing I wanted to bring to your attention, you do seem usually in the process of the pound of cure rather than the ounce of prevention, and my suggestion is if this board could get more involved in cities permit process, particularly for manufacturers, as this case illustrates, and require environmental review before this happens, maybe the ounce of prevention there might use less staff time, less money than the follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, that was our last speaker. Any board comments or questions? Mr. Jeffries?
My comments, Mr. Chair, is that I think that I'm looking for a resolution, and not in the next decade, but as soon as possible. I've been on this board for a number of years, and we've been ongoing with this probably for about 4 or 5 years that I can remember. And I hope that between the staff and Olin with the feasibility study that the ongoing correspondence doesn't take a year to complete, which sometimes has a tendency to drag on and on. I think these people are owed an explanation and a resolution. And the sooner that the staff is able to compile that information and this board is able to make a decision on the end results, the sooner the better.
Okay. Something I would like to specifically see, and I don't know what's in the feasibility report, I would like to know what, when we start discussing a cleanup and abatement order. If when cost starts to be injected into the discussion, I'm hoping that we're going to see a comparison to putting appropriate filters on water wells that are currently drawing water and those that have been shut down because of perchlorate. I briefly looked at this report from that gentleman, the chemist from San Jose, and he talked about the tremendous pumping costs. You know, to pump water out, filter it, and then re-inject it seems like, you know, a very expensive proposition. It may not be. But if people are drawing on this aquifer right now, I'd like to know what the cost would be in having filters put on those waters that would strip out the perchlorate, because we wouldn't be paying for pumping twice. And you have all of those wells already inserted into the aquifer, so we might get a much faster draw on the aquifer and get it cleaned up faster. So at least when we get to that point, and I agree with Mr. Jeffries, it needs to be sooner than later. I hope that that is part of the discussion as a comparison. Okay. All right. Mr. Briggs, anything else on this?
Well, actually, I was going to make that very point that, that since we have water being drawn, in fact, the city of Morgan Hill is already treating their water, removing perchlorate, as you've heard, and there are other wells to the south of the site that are that have wellhead treatment. So it's not a matter of having to pump it twice. So that's not really a – when you talk about injecting economics into it, we've got to be real careful with those kind of comparisons. So that was one point. And then in terms of our review, we did want to make sure that we benefited from the comments of all the folks who spoke here before we issued our letter on the cleanup feasibility report. And I think we've heard from everybody now. So we benefited from that, and we will be considering those in terms of finalizing our letter. That may require additional information, as Hector was talking about. But as we discussed already, we're hopeful that we'll be able to agendize an item for the board's consideration that will cover the entire area. And we won't have this issue of, you know, the north-south war. We'll cover the entire area. And as we said, hopefully that will be the first meeting of the calendar year.
Okay.
And we will, as I said, send the letter to you, the board members, as soon as it's sent out to Olin as well as all the other parties.
Okay. All right. Any last comments? Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, just one thought on joining the north and south in one big CAO. Maybe we could have our legal staff look into what I wouldn't want to happen is if there were some legal action based on something going on in the north, I wouldn't want that to put the whole CAO on hold so that things in the south could continue if someone were to take legal action on the northern part of it, which I think is a possibility.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
It wouldn't shut down the whole CAO?
Olin would have to request a stay from the state board, and they wouldn't stay the whole order. They would stay the parts that were disputed.
Okay, great.
They may dispute the whole thing, but.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Dr. Bowker.
I just would like to make sure that there is a aggressive, that something happens more than monitor and attenuate. That phrase bothers me a whole bunch. I'd like to see some proactive measures to clean up, whatever they may be.
I think we would all agree with you. Okay. Next one, Mr. Briggs, 6.
Okay. I'd like to thank everyone who attended for this item. Appreciate everyone's input.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up on what's in the report.